Almost all families are touched by illness or crisis during their lifetime, and the impact on the entire family is intense and often overwhelming. Deliver the Dream specializes in programs helping families facing life-changing medical issues. You can get more information at deliverthedream.org. That's a notice from the WLRN Community Bulletin Board.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Wednesday edition. Joseph Cooper with you, along with Bonnie Berman. And this hour, we visit with journalist and former financial columnist Helene Olin. She's written Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. And Helene Olin joins us from NPR, New York. Welcome, Helene.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, good to have you. You write that in attempting to fix our economic problems, our increasingly individualistic culture caused us to embrace a self-help approach to what was clearly a greater social issue. What is the greater issue that's being overlooked?
The greater issue that's being overlooked is that our incomes were stagnating and falling since the late 1970s. Our net worth plunged 40% alone between 2007 and 2010. All of this occurred as the cost of living, especially for things like healthcare, housing, education, as I call them, the things you can't live without, went up at rates well beyond that of inflation for decades. And instead of saying we have a problem, people in the financial services industry said, hey, we have a solve for you. Invest with us and we will save you.
What are the origins of financial therapy that we've witnessed over the past decades?
Financial therapy was one of my favorite things I stumbled into while writing the book, is the idea that our money traumas go back to not the class we were born in. Keep in mind, we live in a country where there's very limited class mobility right now, but back to our first money memories. And this originates in the 1970s. And it sort of hangs around for a long time, and it comes out of hibernation after the financial crisis. And they hold up people like Western star Winona Judd, who actually gave an interview to the New York Times saying, I'm down to only the cars I need now, as solves for all of us.
I mean, we don't all relate to that.
Do you have more cars than you need ever?
Right. Well, you write that that movement, for all its flaws, has hit one universal truth when it comes to money. The vast majority of us are nuts. What do you mean by that?
Well, most of us don't do what we're supposed to do, right? We get 401k plans, we just check off boxes, we don't open the statements. The majority of us, despite what the government would have us, people like John Boehner would claim as of today, we don't actually balance our own budgets. Two-thirds of us don't do it. We barely know what's in our checking accounts at any given time. We are actually functionally not handling our money very rationally. However, I would argue that attempting to solve that is sort of like attempting to solve the human condition. You're not going to do it. So you need to really take steps to help people instead of, lecturing them, hectoring them, and telling them all their financial problems are the result of too many lattes and gross overspending.
You're rather negative about some of the better-known financial gurus like Susie Orman and Jim Cramer. Why is that? Don't they actually help some people?
Well, everybody's different here, and I should come right out and say, if Jim Cramer has helped anybody, I'd like them to step forward right now. I don't think screaming the name of stocks on television and people investing that way is helping very many people. In fact, if anything, the only people it's helping, according to a paper that came out a few years ago from the University of Dayton, are the people who hear the names of everything Jim Cramer recommends and immediately go out and short or bet against them. That seems to be a really good strategy for making money. And that's because, of course, if you're getting your financial advice on television, you're not getting anything resembling, an insider tip or strategic advice. You're getting the name of a stock that's being screamed to a couple of 100,000 people at the same time as
well,
you.
Well, public TV viewers have embraced Susie Orman for years. What's not to like about her?
What's not to like? Susie Orman comes out of the Bay Area self-help culture of the 1970s and 80s. So it's all very much about how you feel about your money. This means that how Susie feels about her advice is often contradictory. She changes her mind frequently. I swear I once saw a performance by her where she opened up the talk by saying, "What should you do with your money now? I have no idea," and then gave advice 20 minutes later into the talk. So that's a problem. The other problem is she can be very hectoring, and she puts responsibility on people of things that they're really not responsible for. It's really hard to cut and save your way out of the financial environment we're in now. And to tell people that they can borders on the irresponsible, in my view. And then the final part, I should say, is, of course, she's filled with conflicts of interest.
Explain that.
She's selling financial products. She's promoting the fact that we all need wills. Well, guess who has a will kit? Okay, a will is a good thing, but it probably should not be your first thing on your list when you're doing things. She has her own pre-approved debit card, where she, you should buy hers, not anybody else's, if you want a prepaid debit card. She has preached for years that you shouldn't buy anything but a used car, and then turned up in a $40,000 new Acura car commercial last winter. So, she's as conflicted as anybody else out there.
Well, is there ever a good time and place for financial advice and financial advisors?
Of course there is. And I would never say don't get financial advice. What I would say is make sure the person you seek advice from has something called a fiduciary duty to you. That is the duty to act in your best interests. Most of us think anybody we go to has that duty. In fact, the vast majority do not. Both the Department of Labor and the SEC have been trying to get a handle on this situation for years without much in the way of luck so far, because the industry pushback is extreme, because they make more money by not having to act in your best interests.
So how can that be resolved? I mean, how many financial advisors are there? I think you say something like 300,000 in 2011?
Right. There's over 300,000, roughly around 350,000. The way this can be resolved is by, constant pushback at this, and by people not getting advice from anybody who isn't working to the fiduciary standard. And I should say, the best way to describe the fiduciary standard, which is, sounds very complicated. Journalist Jill Schlesinger at CBS, who I love, always calls it the F word so that people remember it, is that you have a duty to act in somebody's best interest, which means if you went to a store and were going to buy some clothing, at the store where they work to the fiduciary standard, they would have to sell you a dress or suit that fit well, that was flattering, and if it needed alterations, could be done easily and inexpensively. At the store where they were working to the suitability standard, which is what most financial advisors and insurance brokers and stockbrokers are working to, they could sell you something that sort of had to vaguely fit, didn't have to be the most flattering color or fit, and if it needed alterations, it could be done quite expensively with some inconvenience to you.
So how do we find these people, these particular individuals who will be who will meet their fiduciary duty?
You need to ask, and you need to not take no for an answer. That is a huge thing. I had an interview a few weeks ago where I kept saying that, and they said, "But people won't ask. What can they do then?" And I said, "I'm sorry, but you have to ask. There's no way around it. You can look it up online. Sometimes, if they are fiduciary, they will often say. But mysteriously, if they're not, there's no mention of it. And not everybody says. So you really do need to ask these questions. It's really important to remember that your financial services provider is not your friend. We don't pay our friends to spend time with us.
If there's no commission involved, doesn't that mean that the financial planner then has got to be on the up and up? Because if you don't make money, they don't make money.
Usually, but it's still a good idea to ask. Some people are under the fiduciary standard do work on commission, so you do have to ask. But in general, I should say I am not a fan of the commission system. And I think any time you give somebody an incentive to act in certain ways in which they will be paid better than others. That is usually a way in which investors get themselves in trouble.
So you think that they just churn these accounts in order to make their commissions?
It's not just churning. It's that financial planners and advisors can be compensated in different ways. And if they're working under the commission standard, product A might pay a 1% commission and product B might pay an 8% commission. Mm. And you better believe a certain percentage of them are going to promote product B no matter what.
We're speaking with Helene Olin. She's a journalist and former financial columnist. Her book is entitled Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. It's Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. South Florida Theater League and 91.3 WLRN offer same-day, half-price tickets at leading regional theaters and cultural organizations, including Gable Stage, Seraphic Fire, Pembroke Pines Topa, Otra Theater, and Stage Door. Information and a complete list of shows online at culturalconnection.org. Culturalconnection.org, your ticket to the cultural arts. City Year Miami unites a diverse group of 17 to 24-year-olds for a year of service as tutors, mentors, and role models who make a difference to students and schools. You can learn more online at cityyear.org. City Year, give a year, change the world.
Commemorating 500 years of Spain in Florida, two-time Grammy nominee Seraphic Fire presents The Golden Age of Spain, an exploration of the music that accompanied Ponce de Leon and his crew on their momentous journey towards the New World. Concerts April 10th through 14th in Dade, Broward, and Boca Raton. Tickets and info at seraphicfire.org or 305-285-9060.
And we return 18 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, and we continue our conversation with Helene Olin. She's the author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. If you'd like to join in the conversation with a question or a comment, it's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email, that's radio@wlrn.org. Helene, oftentimes if I'm listening to AM radio, I hear all these spots about debt consolidation pitches, and I suppose a lot of people are behind the eight ball, they're close to bankruptcy. How is consolidating their debt with one of these services really going to get them out of the water?
It often does not. Sometimes it works because sometimes some organizations, usually nonprofits,
right,
by the way, which means they're not on the radio,
right,
can negotiate with you and lower the payments, and then you pay them one, chunk a month. And that does work for some people. However, the vast majority of these are not particularly very good. They're not negotiating great deals for you. It also damages your credit record quite a bit. And frankly, a lot of people are better off declaring bankruptcy. We live in a society, we seem to have this idea that everybody who declares bankruptcy is irresponsible. And in fact, what we know from all the survey data is that most people hold on much longer than perhaps they should before declaring bankruptcy. And, the leading causes of bankruptcy are, as Elizabeth Warren famously has pointed out through her work, healthcare crises, unemployment, fractured families, all the traumas of, American life in the 21st century.
But doesn't bankruptcy, declaring bankruptcy, hurt your credit as well?
It does, but if you're going to hurt your credit, an argument could be made that, at least do it in the way that's least financially harmful to you.
It's much more difficult to declare bankruptcy these days, correct?
Right. There were changes in 2005 that made it much harder to just walk away from your debts. That being said, the vast majority of people still qualify, which tells you, right there, that it means that these debts were not frivolous debts and they were not caused by people, just outspending what they were earning. They were caused by people who had real significant life crises. The other issue, I should say, is the other change that 2005 did, which is particularly heinous, is it no longer allowed people who had student debt to declare bankruptcy and walk away from the private student loans. And that is something that is causing an immense amount of financial pain right now for huge numbers of people.
David in North Miami says, is it still true that home values grow 1% a year after inflation and that most four-year degrees pay for themselves in 10 years?
The first part of your question is if I could foretell the future, I wouldn't have written this book. I'd be off investing somewhere. We don't know how housing is going to do in 6 months or 6 years. Why it worked for so long and for so many people, because in fact it was just a so-so investment, was that it was an automatic savings plan. You'd put your money in, you couldn't get it out. There were no second mortgages, right? The year I was born, this didn't exist. And so people saved, put their money, paid their mortgage, which had a fairly low interest rate like now. And, 30 years down the road, they sold the house, they made some money, and they thought they had done great because they didn't take into account inflation. In fact, they had just done okay. So is housing a good investment? I don't know the answer to that. Though I will say, I think there's something to owning your own home. I do believe that. As to the other part of the question, which was what again? I'm sorry.
Is it true that most four-year degrees pay for themselves in 10 years?
They did. Do they now? We don't know. Again, we don't know the answer to that. Cost of college has gone up at extraordinary rates over the past several years. People in their 20s are having an immensely hard time getting a foot in the door of the workforce right now.
People with master's degrees are flipping burgers.
Lawyers are not getting jobs. Somebody came out with a study yesterday that showed that after you account for roughly the top 20 law schools, about half of newly graduated lawyers are working way below the level they thought they would, by which I mean either not in the profession or with very contingent work.
You refute the prevailing idea that women and men are very different when it comes to how they think about and handle money. What are your findings?
My findings are, this is somewhat uncomfortable, we don't like to admit this. Women have less money than men because they go through life, they earn less, they have more responsibilities on their money, i.e. women tend to be single moms more often. And finally, they live longer, thus they need more money. They're not irresponsible, and they don't invest any worse than men. That's just a complete myth. And it's a complete myth designed to cover up all those other facts that I just mentioned.
That they earn less.
They earn less, live longer, and have more responsibilities. Women, we don't like to say it, but women are often victims of discrimination. Yesterday was Equal Pay Day, after all. Women are still earning 77 to 78 cents, for every dollar a man earns. That number has not budged significantly in two decades. That's why women have less money. In fact, the financial literacy of both sexes, when you look at it, is actually quite dismal. Men have slightly more knowledge than women, but if you look at actual behavior, that knowledge doesn't seem to help them very much. Men tend to trade more frequently. They tend to not ask questions, which leads them to trouble. And finally, and I admit this is my anecdotal take, is whenever I went to things like, Forex trading conventions, various stock picking scheme meetups, the Money Show, which is a big event that takes place in Orlando every year, I would say the crowd is anywhere from 85 to 95% male. You do not see women falling for this stuff. And I have to say, you can't turn around and say, God, they're so ignorant, they won't flip stocks. What do you know?
A lot of people would think that women are more gullible to financial scammers, but that isn't so then.
No, that is not so. If anything, they might be, although the survey data is a little mixed on this, they might be slightly less gullible. And the reason is because women admit that they lack knowledge, as opposed to men who, you know, think they know it all. You know, the whole joke about, you know, women ask for directions when they get lost when they're driving and men don't.
Right.
That women actually probably head off a certain percentage of scammers, because if you're a scammer, right, if your mark starts asking questions, you might just take yourself off and go somewhere else. So that actually seems to stop a certain amount of this stuff. The most likely victim of fraud is a middle-aged man with some financial knowledge in his late 50s. An Anglo, by the way.
And you did some stuff. And you, what kind of studies showed that?
There's just a bunch of studies from, and I'm not going to remember the names because I don't have my book in front of me, unfortunately. But there's been a whole group of studies from groups like the SEC, which look at financial fraud. The other thing I will point out is that our financial smarts do peak in our early to mid-50s, believe it or not. Those are studies by behavioral finance people who actually bring people into labs and test them on all sorts of questions. And that seems to leave people more gullible as well as they get older. Some people have speculated that the same focus that makes elderly people more happy leads them to suspend their judgment a little bit more, and that might be part of the issue. Though that starts getting into, you know, how do you determine this exactly?
Right.
What we do know is that cognitively we peak at our early to mid-50s.
Or also, some people may be thinking, well, I'm getting close to the end of my life. I'll just roll the dice here if I've got some money to bounce around with.
Well, more likely what they're thinking is just the opposite. I actually had a lovely talk with Jane Bryant Quinn, who is one of the great personal finance columnists. And she's still out there, everybody. You should read her. She felt it was the opposite issue, that people are older and they're scared that they're going to outlive their savings. This has become an especially huge part of the issue in the past several years because of the low interest rate environment we're in, that, you know, seniors are used to being able to, you know, put their money in the bank or a bond fund and get 7-8% return. Right. And that just doesn't exist anymore. And so they're turning to things, either they're being led to more risky investments or they're, you know, they're desperate enough to go to them. One other person speculated to me that they felt another part of the issue could be is that when today's seniors were at their peak in the 1980s, interest rates in bank accounts were close to 15%. So a claim that might seem quite outlandish to me wouldn't necessarily strike them as outlandish because they remember a higher interest rate environment than I do.
Right.
We're speaking with Helene Olin about her book, Pound Foolish. If you'd like to join in, that's 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. We have some lines open. And email, that's radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org. Helene, tell us about Underearners Anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Underearners Anonymous is a group. I'm not sure if they meet down in Florida. They definitely have a big presence in both New York and Los Angeles, which are the two cities where I mostly wrote this book. And they are Alcoholics Anonymous, but for people who want to earn more money.
So there's a step program involved. Then.
There's a step program involved, and you go to their meetings, and you talk about what you see as your self-defeating behaviors that have led you to this point of you under-earning, under-working, and otherwise not doing as well as you'd like. And of course, in one sense, it does help. You know, if you're going to keep a job log, you might get a little bit more diligent about the whole thing. On the other hand, of course, you know, we live in a terrible, terrible economy right now. And our unemployment rate is over 7%. 500,000 people simply vanished from the workforce last month. It's hard to believe that attending Underearners Anonymous is going to help people out of this situation. I came to feel that while it's well meant, it falls into the financial therapy of it all, that it, you know, is really distracting us from the main problem, which is our increasingly financially fragmented society.
So if people can't earn enough money at their jobs, many are without 401ks. I forget what percentage you said of people.
Half
of people.
It's half.
So what does one do to make ends meet right now in this economy?
At the moment, frankly, most people are probably not making ends meet very well. One of the issues with personal finance advice is you can't give advice if somebody's not making enough money. If salaries are falling, people are by definition going to have a huge problem on their hands. So, we right now know that somewhere around half of us are living paycheck to paycheck. We know that half of us have no retirement accounts at all. We know that of the people who do have retirement accounts, the vast majority have less than $100,000 in them. These are not anywhere near enough money to help people. And I think the responsible thing to do in this environment is to get people, instead of looking to their personal finances, is to think of their personal finances in a more group-oriented way and say, how did we get here and how on earth are we going to get out of this as a group? Because one by one, 300 million of us are not going to solve this.
We're speaking with Helene Olin. We want to talk more about that collective mentality that you speak of. She's a journalist and former financial columnist. The name of her book is Pound Foolish. It's Topical Currents. We're going to take another short break. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
And this is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. Comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery are offered for older adults and baby boomers at Hanley Center. 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life. O Miami Poetry Festival is April 1st through the 30th, a poetry festival for everyone in South Florida. You can read a poem, submit a poem, or hear a poem. O Miami Poetry Festival details at omiami.org.
For many, a charitable bequest is a unique expression of appreciation. The thoughtfulness of many individual families, like the Levinsons and Fines, has led to planned gifts which help WLRN sustain and grow. Through your will or estate plan, you can name Friends of WLRN as the beneficiary of your estate or a portion of it, providing an enduring legacy of public media for years to come. To learn more about making an impact through planned gifts, call 305-350-7977.
And welcome back to Topical Currents for Wednesday. Bonnie Berman here with Joseph Cooper and journalist and former financial columnist Helene Olin. If you want to join in the conversation, the number to call is 1-800-743-9576, and we'll get to some of your calls. But Helene, talk about that. You said we need to talk about our money collectively rather than as an individual problem. I don't understand how that will help.
It will help because our problems go way beyond ourselves. And, we probably need political action. We really need to acknowledge, for example, we feel the 401k as a natural part of our environment. In fact, it is barely 30 years old. It started as an accidental supplement to our pension system. It was never intended by the government to fully fund our retirements. And guess what? It can't do it, or it does it for very few people. Obviously, we need to start talking about retirement and how to fund it properly in a way that works. And you're seeing it both in other countries. Australia has switched over to 9% mandatory set-asides by both employer and employee, so you're not doing it alone. You're seeing it. Other states are beginning to look at it here. California is now investigating what they call universal retirement accounts, where people who don't have access to private plans would set aside 3% of their salary to be managed by a state fund. It's not enough, but it's certainly more than they would have right now.
Right.
There are various professors out there coming up with innovative plans as to how to address this. Tom Harkin in Congress is looking at different ways to do it. He's a supporter of another version of these universal accounts. There are options out there. We don't talk about them. We need to talk about them. It's really important because, again, there's no tip I'm going to give you on the air that's going to be able to make you set aside between 15 and 20% of your salary, not for immediate needs, not for emergency savings, not for your kids' college education, but for your retirement. I don't know how to make anybody do that or give them the financial wherewithal to do that. And that's the number that's being bandied about right now by many people who are smarter than me on this subject.
Let's take a call or two on today's program. Jonathan in Miami. Hi there.
Hi. Glad to be online with you guys. I just had a quick question for your guest today. What is your opinion of the Fed's current financial or fiscal position, where they've been kind of pumping so much money into quote unquote the economy, but specific institutions, and how that might play a role later on down the line with the inflation?
We don't know how it will ultimately play out, and you can make an argument for both sides of this equation. What we do seem to know is, as if you're worried, we're not going to be Cyprus. The government is not taking our money at the banks. The odds of triggering a massive wave of inflation are pretty slim. And the reason we can say this with some confidence is we control our own currency, and that our currency is the reserve currency of the world. So there is an incentive for people to use it, and we are not at the whims of other countries, like, say, Cyprus was, in terms of how to inflate or deflate our money supply. That is a huge, huge issue that is often left out and neglected when people are talking about these things. Do I think what the Fed has done is correct? I actually more or less do. I think we would have been in such terrible straits had they not done it, that I think talking about inflation is almost a luxury item at that point. We really forget how bad it was, how quickly we forget in 2008. And I think that's a really important point to emphasize. You probably don't want to know what would have happened had they not done it.
And we move along to another caller. This is Jim in Delray Beach. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Yes, hi.
I just want to say at the outset, excuse me, I'm an independent contractor. I work for a company that we market financial services to middle-class people and have for 35 years. A couple of things. The retirement savings issue. When I've set for clients with clients for 17 years, and we do what's called a financial needs analysis, and we look at, you know, what's going on in their lives. And the national figures are astounding. The number of people, and this is pre-2008 now, who did not, opted not to participate in any way with 401ks that they were offered through their employer, right? And even we always recommend at least a minimum up to the match, where it's dollar for dollar, so it's you're earning 100%. So my contention here is that, you know, people have overconsumed for decades in this country. We are overconsuming, okay? And that's a personal decision people have made. Now, I really don't have a lot of sympathy with people who have options to put money into a 401k, Roth IRA, traditional IRAs. My wife started our traditional IRAs in the 80s, and we made a transition to Roth. I participated in 401ks before going into business for myself. And the other thing, I manage my parents' retirement, 83, 85 years old. I've kept them in the equity market. They're back to almost par in terms of their investment income, and I do get an income stream. The fallacy is you cannot grow your investments in this market is crazy. We're up 10, 11% in the S&P 500.
Let's let Miss Olin respond, Jim. Brought up quite a few issues.
The savings issue is a really intriguing one, and it's one of the great myths out there. Again, what we know is that people's salaries have been stagnating and falling for several decades as the cost of things they cannot do without, education, healthcare, housing, have gone up at rates well beyond that of inflation. Are people sometimes extravagant? Of course they are. Should they put money in their 401ks? Yes. But on the other hand, we know that when people are responsible and they do put money in their 401ks, the leakage problem, i.e. the idea that they need to take money out of the 401k, has gotten worse and worse and worse over the past decade and is now up to 1 in 4. And these are people who thought they were putting money away but couldn't keep it away because they had other emergency needs. In fact, it is simply impossible in our society for the vast majority of people to save enough in an emergency fund for their kids' college and for their retirement. And that comes in before you deal with the fact that most people, in the end, don't really know how much to save for retirement for a very simple fact. They don't know how long they're going to live. So we really can't tell them fully how much they should save. Do they need to save enough money to make it to 95 or 70? I mean, right. If you know the answer to that, you're ahead of me. So that's a huge, huge issue. The other part of this is, you know, first, keep in mind, yes, the stock market is finally back. That is 6 years of, 5.5, 6 years of, by the way, earnings that did not exist. It is only back to where it was. Okay, so that's the first part of this. Second, most people are not rational investors. Again, if we were all rational, the world would work very differently. They don't invest at the right times. They don't put their money in at the correct times. They don't take their money out at the correct times. They get scared. They get optimistic. They also have this rampant inability to foresee the future. Strangely enough.
Well, who can?
So, you're right, exactly. So, you know, this whole idea that people should just kind of know what to do is, on the face of it, just kind of ridiculous. This is why group ideas like pensions and Social Security tend to work much better than individuals doing this one by one. And that's before we even get into the fact that things like Social Security and pensions are actually much more cost effective on a dollar per dollar basis.
We have an emailer, Nina, I think. Can the advisors at places like Fidelity, Vanguard, or T. Rowe Price be trusted to act in your best financial interests?
Again, you need to ask. It's a very important question. I personally like Vanguard and T. Rowe an awful lot, and generally feel that if you call up, you'll do okay. That being said, you need to ask always about, you know, what exact duty they have to you. What we know in terms of investing, just so you know, is that the vast, vast majority of us simply do best when in it, a diversified selection of index funds. So the second somebody on the other end of the phone, and it doesn't matter what mutual fund family they're with, starts telling you about this new great managed fund, it's probably not the best thing for you, because most investors, and this includes people who run mutual funds and ETFs, are not going to beat the market. Less than 1% of us have the ability to beat the market year in and year out, and that includes that group. So that's really the best advice I can give you.
What are ETFs?
Exchange-traded funds, they're kind of a new twist to make this very, very simple on investing, that have lower cost bases than mutual funds. They seem to be better for most people.
What about for those of us who this is all Greek, you know, this whole mutual funds and ETFs, and if we don't know who to turn to, and we don't have the background in finance or the time or the inclination to learn, I mean, where do we go?
Well, that's why I think it's so important to really change some of the legislation around all of this and the laws and the regulation. That's what I mean when I say we simply can't solve this one by one. The lucky person hearing me on the radio today might know now to ask about the fiduciary standard and know that calling Vanguard is probably a helpful thing. But for the rest of us, we really need, for instance, to, you know, lobby our Congress so that they don't fight back the next time the Department of Labor or the SEC proposes expanding the fiduciary standard to cover most salesmen of financial product and not simply the registered investment advisory community right now.
We're speaking with Helene Olin, journalist, former financial columnist, and the name of her book is Pound Foolish. On today's Topical Currents, we'll take a short break. We'll come back and take more of your calls. Stay with us.
And you are listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. Thanks for joining us today. The Museum of Discovery and Science presents Steven Spielberg's epic Jurassic Park as it returns to commemorate the movie's 20th anniversary with a special 3D engagement through April 17th at AutoNation IMAX 3D Theater, the biggest screen in South Florida. T-Rex comes alive in 3D on the five-story tall screen. Showtimes at MODS.org. The Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Biscayne Nature Center presents the Wild and Scenic Film Festival April 20th and 21st. The gala is Saturday night with an all-day film festival on Sunday featuring award-winning short films about climate change. Details at BiscayneNatureCenter.org.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Helene Olin is joining us this hour. She's the author of Pound Foolish. Helene, how about a website? I also know you have some blogging that you do.
That's right. My website is www.heleneolin.com. And I am now writing twice a week for The Guardian, the U.S. edition. You can find me online under the Money tab. And finally, of course, I'm supposed to say, my publisher would not be happy if I didn't, that you're supposed to buy my book. You could also go to the library if you want to be personally financially responsible. But if you want to buy it, you can go to any independent bookstore near you, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Pretty much most of the major sellers have it at this point.
Okay, we get the picture. Mm-hmm. Let's move along to a Hollywood caller. This is Teen, is that right?
That's correct.
Hi.
Hi, first-time caller. I have a question for Ms. Olson. My parents have bought into an assisted living facility, and they were recently pitched annuities. They're 87 and 82.
No.
And I
no.
would think it ties it up. Their money's tied up, and they're limited funds. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm cutting you off right now because I can tell you the answer. I want to tell you what's going on. The annuity sales industry is unreal. They go into seniors' residences. They pitch them on free lunches and free dinners. They scare them to death. They say things like, seniors, afraid of outliving your retirement savings. Seniors, afraid the government's going to get their mitts on your inheritance and your children will get nothing. Seniors, I have a product for you. Buy this. And it's an annuity. It's usually something called an equity indexed annuity. Sometimes it's a variable annuity. It locks their money up for years, often beyond their projected lifespans. And it is not. It comes with very high commissions for the brokers selling these things.
And are there penalties?
Tell them no.
Are there penalties?
Yes.
There are.
There
most certainly are, and I would tell you to beg your parents to stay away.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank
thanks
you.
For your call. Tell me, Helene Olin, on daytime TV, there's an awful lot of spots for this reverse mortgage business.
Again, some people really need reverse mortgages, and there are good ones out there. However, they probably aren't the ones being advertised on television. Reverse mortgages come with extremely high fees. They can cause your estate when you die, massive amounts of issues. I would urge anybody to go to a financial planner with a duty to you before taking on a reverse mortgage.
I'm interested to know what the reaction to your book has been in financial circles.
It has been all over the place. A lot of people obviously didn't like it. On the other hand, it has had a huge number of surprising fans. A lot of advisors who have contacted me to say I was too kind to the industry, that they have seen much, much worse out there, complete with stories, that to keep speaking about this, that, this has become an industry that is, to a greater extent, profiting by preying on an awful lot of people. Which isn't to say that sometimes its products don't help people, but they certainly don't help as much as advertised.
We have another emailer, Alex. I entered college. I graduate May 4th with a BAS. I was a WAMU employee whose 401k is now in Chase 401k. I would like to self-direct a new IRA with this Chase 401k money. Should I roll over into an IRA self-direct or cash out and self-direct a new portfolio?
Okay, first of all, you do not cash out at all. I mean, of a retirement account. I mean, it has to stay as a retirement account. It's hard for me to give you full advice without knowing your
situation. That's kind of specific there.
Right.
So, and I would need to know a lot more about what other assets you have. But the thing I would say to you is most of the time, most people are best off staying in an employee 401k, even if they are not an employee of that organization anymore.
Okay.
And the reason is because the cost basis of the investments is much lower than it would be in an individual retirement account. As a result, not surprisingly, a lot of financial services organizations try to pitch people like you on the need to take their money out of 401ks and put it in IRAs, in individual IRAs. And it's just simply almost all the time very bad advice. And they do it because they will make more money doing it.
Okay, Alex, I hope that answers your question.
And we'll take another call. We're getting very close to the end of the program, so please be brief. This is Sam in Pinecrest. Hi.
Hello, how you doing?
Okay.
My concern is the worth of money. If I, as a consumer and a saver, put my money in the bank and I get 0% on it, or 0.1%, and the bank takes that same money and loans it out for 15 and 20%, isn't the deck stacked? Isn't that should be the first lesson on financial education? I mean, it's crazy. I think this gets back to what you said, a collective effort to change some of the laws. I'd like your
right.
response.
I actually agree with you, though I will say they are not lending it out at 15 to 20% right now. But even if they're lending it out at 3 to 6% or 3 to 7%, that's still a heck of a lot better than you're doing. And I agree. I think it is one of the reasons seniors are being preyed upon so dreadfully right now is because they can't safely leave their money in the bank and even get the teeniest, tiniest of interest rates. The bank on my corner is currently paying just around 1%, and that's not untypical, unfortunately.
Some of the online banks have higher interest rates. I wonder why that is.
By the way, I should say it's very minuscule. It's like a couple of basis points, but they do because they don't have the whole overhead structure.
Right.
You know, it's the equivalent of Amazon being able to sell a book cheaper than your local bookstore. If they have one warehouse, it's a lot, you know, cheaper than maintaining 100 stores.
Well, we're almost to the end of the program, Helene, but I wanted you to talk about that aspect of shame that you mentioned in the
right.
book and dispelling the myth that people are to blame for their financial woes. You don't put the responsibility or the onus on them.
Right. What I like to say is, you know, as I said, we've been living in this society where for 30 years our, you know, finances have been slowly falling apart. But, you know, the myth of our country is Horatio Alger. Anybody can make it. To challenge that is to challenge not just an American myth, but a global myth. And as a result, you know, there's a lot of individual shame around financial failures because we are brought up on this myth that anybody can do it. We should all succeed one by one. And if we can't succeed, it's our own fault. And that, moreover, we're not really responsible for anybody else. And none of this is particularly true. Even if you don't want to be responsible for anybody else, you know, together we'll probably get somewhere a heck of a lot faster than by trying to, you know, all make it financially one by one. And as to the rest, you know, most of us can be said to have some serious financial failures behind us. As I said, you know, most of us don't have enough money saved for retirement. Most of us do make financial mistakes pretty regularly. Most of us, you know, have done, you know, things we probably shouldn't have done. We've suffered bad luck. We've had healthcare crises, you know, you name it. And instead of taking this as an individual failure and being embarrassed by it, we really need to start speaking up about it. A healthcare crisis, for instance, should not have the ability, as it did for one woman I interviewed for the book, to wipe out a seven-figure retirement account. Mm-hmm. It just shouldn't.
And have them lose homes, too.
And, you know, and people lose homes. I mean, it's horrible what goes on out there. And, you know, that's just wrong. And I think we have to admit that.
Will you give us your websites again and your blogs so we can...
Sure. It's www.HelaineOlin.com.
And can you spell that because it's spelled a little unconventionally?
Oh, that's right. Yes. My parents made it up, folks. It's Helaine is Elaine with an H in front of it. So it's H-E-L-A-I-N-E, Olin, O-L-E-N.com. And at The Guardian, you could just go to The Guardian, the U.S. edition, and then click on the Money tab, and you'll see my blog right there.
Well, we certainly want to thank you. Also, our apologies to callers we couldn't get on the air this hour. Helaine Olin is the author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And today's program was produced by Richard Ives, directed by Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives of this and past programs at our website. That's WLRN.org. Also, more information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like if you will. And tomorrow's program begins with tax tips. The IRS deadline is Monday, and we'll have experts on hand. Also, Linda Gassenheimer and wine columnist Fred Tasker's food and dining segment. And now our Journalism Hall of Fame calendar for April 10th. On this day in 1841, 172 years ago, Horace Greeley founds the New York Tribune. A dedicated abolitionist, Greeley opposed the renomination of Abraham Lincoln in 1864. And on this day in 1847, 176 years ago, the birth in Hungary of Joseph Pulitzer. He founded the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the New York World. The Pulitzer Prize. One more while we consider the best and the brightest. On this day in 1934, 79 years ago, the birth of writer David Halberstam in New York City. He won a Pulitzer in 1964 for his Vietnam War reporting and died in 2007 in a traffic accident in California. He was en route to interview quarterback great Y.A. Tittle. Our theme music created by Michael Levine. And we leave with this from David Halberstam, speaking of his award-winning reporting during the Vietnam War. Quote, "We had absolute military superiority, but they had absolute political supremacy. That led to a stalemate, and that became the governing issue." Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is 9-